Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, upgrading windows to help curb appeal and keep homes efficient. More at callmosby.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. There are an endless array of words that could describe the first 100 days of Donald Trump's second term as president, depending on your point of view. Frenetic, controversial, transformative, chaotic, determined, outrageous, unprecedented, and disorienting. Here's how St. Louis resident and Trump supporter Mark Comfort describes Trump's return to the White House.
I think he has been amazingly aggressive and active. I've been surprised at the level of activity on a number of fronts.
Those numbers of fronts Comfort alludes to almost seem as bottomless as the way to describe Trump's presidency. Since taking office, Trump pardoned or commuted the sentences of participants in the January 6th insurrection, instituted rollback and reinstituted tariffs, implemented much more restrictive immigration regulations, froze funding for a host of medical and higher education ventures, and laid off thousands of federal workers. And while there's no Missouri-specific polling showing how people feel Trump is doing since he returned to the presidency, interviews with Trump fans and foes provide, perhaps unsurprisingly, starkly different assessments. For instance, St. Louis and Ben Brink voted for Trump three times, even though the college professor and entrepreneur doesn't agree with everything the president says or does. But Brink says there's little doubt Trump is trying to follow through on his campaign policies around trade, foreign policy, immigration, and government spending.
Sometimes when people say they really don't like what he's doing, I'm saying, well, you know, that's what the people voted for, and this is an unusual guy. He actually does what people voted for him to do. And part of the reasons, obviously, he's stirred them up to want him to do the things that he did. But I mean, he is keeping promises.
Most Republicans who talked with me liked what Trump was doing when it comes to immigration. They aren't fazed with some of the administration's more controversial initiatives, including shipping hundreds of Venezuelan migrants to a prison in El Salvador. Ryan Johnson, a former Cass County commissioner and longtime Republican political operative, says Trump's actions are warranted, especially given the broad unpopularity with how Democratic President Joe Biden handled deportation and immigration.
Americans are ready for drastic measures in some cases and untraditional approaches. I mean, let's be honest, Donald Trump is a very non-traditional president in the 200 plus years, almost 250 years of our history. But I think that's a good thing. I think that's a necessary thing right now. And sometimes creative or innovative disruption is not a bad thing. And I think American government desperately needs that. And I think with regard to immigration, Americans sounded off in a very, very big way. I mean, this was an issue that's been front and center for the president since before he, you know, came down the escalator in 2015, right?
There was markedly less enthusiasm among GOP voters I spoke with for Trump's aggressive use of tariffs. Bryant Kagi, who lives near Maysville in northern Missouri, is not surprised that Trump would seek to implement tariffs. After all, that's been one of his most consistent policy beliefs since his entry into American politics. But Kagi, who runs a cow-calf beef operation and grows soybeans, corn, and wheat, hopes the public backlash over the tariffs will prompt Republicans to once again embrace free markets and free trade, which was once the party's general stance before Trump came on the scene.
I'm really good at producing corn, soybeans, and beef. And I want to be able to produce those as effectively as I can in the best way I know how. And I want a market that I can send those wherever it makes the most sense and I get the most value. You don't want me growing your carrots or your avocados because I'm not in the right spot. I don't know how to do it. I don't have any markets for it. Let somebody else grow the avocados. Let somebody else, you know, manufacture steel. Let somebody else manufacture microchips. let us do what we do best and let us have open markets that help facilitate me selling the product that I'm best at producing.
Blake Hurst is a former president of the Missouri Farm Bureau and also, among other things, owns a greenhouse business near Tarkio, which is in the northwest corner of Missouri. Like Kagi, he is frustrated with Trump's tariffs, which he contends will do long-term harm to the agricultural economy. Still, Hurst isn't sure that Trump will pay a political price in places like rural Missouri, which voted for the president by historically large margins. Democrats may not be a viable alternative, since many voters see them as too liberal on issues like abortion rights. And the state GOP doesn't seem to be facing any backlash over embracing Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy's hostility towards some pesticides.
And if I were a working politician, I would not want my picture taken with him. I would not want to appear on the same stage with him at the same podium. I would be distancing myself. And yet, you know, if you watch the Missouri State Senate, for example, when their reaction to some of the bills that have been introduced on agricultural chemicals, they're tying themselves ever more closely to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And to me, that seems like a huge political risk, right? I mean, polio, measles, those are bad things, but nobody's worried about it. So my guess would be you're not going to see any shift in my part of the world.
Hurst is probably correct that Missouri Democrats are not likely to regain the rural territory that they dominated for generations anytime soon. But in the St. Louis region, at least, Democrats are more energized and optimistic about their prospects for 2026.
Next in line.
Last Friday, more than 1,000 people attended a town hall-style event in Chesterfield that the state and several local Democratic parties helped organize. This was shortly after the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee announced that they were targeting Missouri's 2nd Congressional District in next year's election. Brentwood resident Monica Zimmerman says she sees a lot of Democratic energy against incumbent Congresswoman Ann Wagner. And Zimmerman thinks Trump's first 100 days made a district Wagner won in 2024 by around 12 points much more competitive.
Our country has lost its way, and I think honesty has gone out the window. People can't trust. There's no values, and it's also affecting the economy. I want people to speak out, because what's happening now is not right. It's not moral. It's not ethical.
Among the attendees who spoke at the event was DeMarco Fincher, a healthcare worker whose father is on Medicaid. Some Republicans have openly talked about making unspecified cuts to that program in a massive tax cut, immigration, and energy bill that could move through Congress soon. Fincher says that being on the healthcare program for the working poor, elderly, and disabled was vital for his dad to get critical medical treatment.
As a son, I am grateful that my dad could get the care that he needs. And Republicans, and especially Congresswoman Wagner, shouldn't be able to take that away from him.
Whether Democrats can actually upend Wagner is an open question. Beating her next year will require a candidate who can raise lots of money and appeal to voters who typically back Republican candidates in the district that encompasses St. Louis, St. Charles, Franklin, and Warren counties. Kirkwood resident David White says winning will require Democrats to be laser-focused on issues that matter to people, particularly the economy. And it will also require national Democrats to pay attention to Missouri, even though the state is not winnable anymore for the party on a presidential level.
The whole party has to have a deep dive, and I'm sure they're doing it, into themselves. And that deep dive has to go down to this area as well, and the state, obviously.
There was at least one out-of-state Democrat on hand at last Friday's town hall, Connecticut U.S. Senator Chris Murphy.
Every state, every district matters. We're fighting for our country's life right now.
Murphy has been traveling all over the country to traditionally Republican-leaning districts, like Missouri 2nd. He says Democratic energy against Trump is about more than just policy disagreement. It's about fear that the country is backsliding into an autocracy.
I don't think there's any historical precedent for what's going on right now in this country. This is the most corrupt White House in the history of the country. What Donald Trump is doing every single day to try to destroy our democracy, to try to crush dissent in this country, to try to destroy the rule of law, there's no time in American history that parallels this. So we need a kind of national mobilization that we have also never seen before in order for this democracy to survive. This is not politics as usual. We shouldn't assume that we are going to have a free and fair election in 2026. Donald Trump is trying to erase citizens' ability to be able to cast their votes. And Republicans are hiding right now because they don't believe in the traditional means of accountability.
For her part, Wagner said in a statement that the town hall was, quote, just another political stunt from the Democrats and shows just how disconnected from hardworking Americans they really are. She also said that it was, quote, rich that an out-of-state liberal elite from Connecticut would think anybody in Missouri cares about what he has to say. But Missouri Democratic Party Chairman Russ Carnahan says the fact that so many people showed up is encouraging, adding that Wagner has not held town halls like other Democratic and Republican members of Congress. Carnahan adds that the second district could be indicative of larger national trends against Trump.
Whether you're a veteran or a retiree or an educator or in healthcare, I mean, you're being impacted by these policies of this administration in ways that are usually not good. We're seeing impacts on the economy. We're seeing impacts to our allies around the world in ways that are not good for our country. And so I think that's woken a lot of people up. And that's going to add on to what we would normally see in terms of pushback from a midterm. I think it could be even greater than normal.
By the way, there are 549 days until the 2026 midterm elections. And how they shake out will depend on what else Trump does and says in the weeks and months ahead. How are you feeling about the actions of Trump's administration in the past 100 days? What would you like to see the administration focus on in the months ahead? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK, or send an email to talk@stlpr.org. We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll talk with STLPR reporters about how Trump's second term is affecting Missouri, St. Louis, and the Metro East. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
Welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. President Donald Trump's first 100 days in office triggered fierce debate over broad policy changes, especially regarding tariffs, immigration enforcement, and paring down the government workforce. And St. Louis Public Radio's reporters have been closely watching how Trump's moves affected individual people throughout Illinois, Missouri, and the St. Louis region. Joining me now to examine Trump's impact is Will Bauer, STLPR's Metro East reporter. Will, welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thanks for having me.
Also coming into the discussion is Andrea Henderson, who covers race, identity, and culture for St. Louis Public Radio. Andrea has been following how Trump's executive orders on immigration are resonating throughout the St. Louis area. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
And here to discuss Trump's impact on Missouri and the St. Louis area's healthcare system is STLPR health reporter Sarah Fentum. Sarah, hello. Welcome.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you all for being here. Andrea, let's start with you. How has Trump's funding cuts affected efforts to, let's just say, resettle refugees here in the St. Louis region?
Yeah, we saw that big time here with our large and small nonprofits that really handle services for immigrants and refugees. Here in the St. Louis area, folks know about International Institute, and they saw some program services cut, which really affected those new Americans or new arrivals that came here to St. Louis from either Afghanistan or some that were coming in from other Central American countries. They also had to furlough a few folks at their organization. I know we also saw that with Welcome Neighbor STL, they lost a few dollars. But in the end, many of the organizations here during that pause and then the reactivation, I guess, of receiving the funds again, they were able to start up some of the efforts that they kind of lost out in the beginning of the year.
What do you think this uncertainty means for refugee resettlement in the region? That it's paused and unpaused and maybe paused again. This is going to be a theme throughout this discussion, but I'm sure it hasn't made the jobs of those groups very easy.
Yeah, no. I believe the St. Louis area last year, they resettle about 1,500 refugees, and this year they were supposed to settle about 2,000. And so far, since those programs have been paused, we most likely won't have those refugees here.
It's a big impact, especially for a region that relies on immigration to maintain its population growth. Now, Sarah, how are universities around the region bracing for potential cuts of National Institute of Health funding, especially places like Washington University or St. Louis University or any other higher education institution?
Right. SLU and WashU are both R1 research universities, which means they get a lot of research funding. And the NIH is a federal agency, and it funnels money into those research projects. And, you know, as a health reporter, I cover that stuff all the time, you know, like interesting stuff with vaccine research, cancer research, all this, these incredible breakthroughs that happen here in the region. And WashU is ranked fourth in the country for the amount of NIH funding grants that they get for that kind of research. And so it's something they've historically been very proud of. And so we stand to lose a lot in this region when NIH funding is cut. Earlier this year, the NIH made an announcement that they were cutting certain costs or capping them at a certain amount, which means that WashU, SLU, other research universities in the region are going to be out potentially tens of millions of dollars. And so even though a judge has halted those cuts after some schools sued, they're dealing with a lot of uncertainty because it's likely the government is going to appeal that decision. And so right now there's a lot of money on the line and people don't really know what's going to happen. And so for one thing, WashU has put big construction projects on hold. You probably saw that in the news. And SLU's president, Fred Pastello, has spoken out openly against those cuts by signing sort of an open letter from a lot of different college leaders that are criticizing this as government overreach and what they call coercive use of public research funding.
Now, Will, at least 121,000 federal workers have been laid off or targeted for layoffs since President Trump regained office 3 months ago. What are some of the ways the layoffs have been felt in the St. Louis region?
So anecdotally, we know that people are either taking those buyouts or are being laid off because they were probationary employees. But maybe from like a 10,000-foot view, we really don't have a great idea of how many and where. DOGE or those various federal agencies haven't, at least as far as I'm aware, put out a list of this many people have been laid off from this agency. But we do know that the St. Louis region employs about 26,000 federal employees. That does not include USPS, the Postal Service. And we're getting that number from Fred, which is not our editor, Fred
Ehrlich. It's not Fred Ehrlich, our editor, who's very good at his job, but I don't think he has those statistics.
I don't know if he's the most authoritative source. It would be the database from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. And I just checked before we went on, the latest number available, which is the number for March, really hasn't changed much in the first couple of months. So maybe we just you know, we don't have the latest data, so that's why we can't tell. But all these like local employers, right, would be big Department of Defense between the civilian employees at Scott Air Force Base or at NGA, those the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. Those employ about 8,000 people between them. And all these employers would be subject to probationary firings. But the problem is there's been tons of lawsuits, and different federal judges have said you can go through with those. No, you can't. And currently at the circuit level, they're hearing those cases right now on the merits of actually can you fire these people because they're probationary in their first 1 or 2 years. So uncertainty, more uncertainty. Yeah.
Let's go to Eric, who is in University City. Eric, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. Hello, Eric. You're on the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm deeply concerned about what's happening in terms of the constitutional issues here and the lack of congressional oversight, or the president taking away money that's been allocated by the Congress. I've never seen this in 50 years after serving in the Vietnam War era. This is a true constitutional crisis, and it's not just about town halls and people showing up or coming in for a town hall. It's about constituent services. Congressman Wagner has not met with realtors when they come to D.C. and many other groups. We drive this country in terms of housing, critical issue here, and around the country. So there's many issues, healthcare. I heard one Republican congressman who was a general in the Air Force, I believe, talk about they fired all the people who were monitoring and birds around aircraft in airports. This is just pure insanity.
Thank you, Eric, for your comments. And there are Democratic members of Congress from the St. Louis region who have been very, very critical of what Trump has had to say. Here is what Congressman Wesley Bell of St. Louis County said to me last month about Trump's funding cuts.
And I think it's important that not only the American people, but people back home understand how this chaos impacts everyone. I think a lot of folks see it as who aren't paying as close attention, I should say, see it as a Democrat versus Republican fight in Washington, D.C. But these actions, these cuts have real impacts to real people right at home.
That was Missouri Congressman Wesley Bell talking with me about federal spending cuts. Will, what have you heard from Illinois Democrats like Nikki Baczynski, who represents a portion of the Metro East?
Yeah, I think they've made, Democrats nationally have made a really concerted effort to get back to their districts, to get back to their state, to talk about all the different changes that are coming down from Washington. So she has been back in the district to critique the Trump administration about a $90 million flood grant that was in limbo for about a day when the Trump administration would have first put a pause out of the Office of Management and Budget on federal on any federal aid, but that ended up getting rescinded. So another example of kind of just uncertainty. She's also been here to talk with the local teachers unions to critique what they say is a really bad idea to eliminate the Department of Education. She's been in town to talk about there were $4.3 million in four different earmarks that didn't make it into the GOP spending plan that was passed last month by Congress. So, or actually, I should say 2 months ago. It's now May. Anyway, so.
What is time, by the way? But 100 days.
100 days is time. And then Senator Dick Durbin, before he announced that he wasn't seeking reelection, he'd been back twice in Cahokia Heights and East St. Louis to talk about what if Medicaid goes away? What does that mean for small clinics and health centers? And then also a USDA program that's already been cut. And what does that mean for food banks and food pantries? So I would imagine this is something that's going to continue a lot from Democrats all over the country through next year's midterm elections.
You know, Will mentioned Medicaid, and while Republicans have been broadly supportive of what Trump has done, I think there have been like little cracks in conventional thinking. For example, This is what Senator Josh Hawley told me last month about the prospect of cutting eligibility for Medicaid.
Yeah, I'm not going to vote for Medicaid benefit cuts. Now, if they want to do work requirements, I'm all for that. I think that's fantastic. But I'm not going to vote for something that ends up cutting benefits for people who are working and who qualify for Medicaid. 21% of Missouri families are either on Medicaid or CHIP. And we're talking about 1.5 million people. So I'm just not going to do that. And I've made that very clear. If they want to do that, they can do that without my vote.
That was Missouri Senator Josh Hawley talking with me last month about the prospect of Medicaid cuts. Sarah, what was kind of your thoughts when you heard the senator's comments there?
I think it's interesting because the thing that stuck out most to me is that he mentioned that fully 1.5 million people in Missouri are on Medicaid, and a lot of them are children and families. And if you know the state's population, that's 25% of our state's population. Approximately 1 in 4 people here is on Medicaid. And so, like, that's enormous. And if any kind of cuts to Medicaid, including a work requirement, like he mentioned, that's going to cut into who's eligible and the amount of money that's available for those programs.
Now, we've talked a lot about funding in this conversation, but Andrea, I would be interested to know what the reaction has been throughout St. Louis to what Immigration and Customs Enforcement has done so far. That is the full name of what's known as ICE, and they have been pretty active in the St. Louis region from reading your articles. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think early on, once Trump was inaugurated, we started to see folks on social media post they've seen ICE in certain areas like supermarkets or at their local churches or just driving along Missouri highways. And it really brought a lot of fear to the community. It really brought a lot of anxiety to folks, whether they were living in mixed status families or if they were people who did not have legal status. It really just kind of brought folks to a standstill as if like, oh, it's actually happening here and not just in larger cities.
What's been the response of nonprofit groups and attorneys to the ICE raids? And what has been the response of the general public? I mean, there have been pretty big protests over this issue in the St. Louis region.
Yeah, from some of the protests that I attended out in Overland, Missouri, there were a bunch of high school students who started it, and they came from Rittner High School, and which has a large Hispanic population there. And many of the students were standing up for their parents, who particularly could have been potentially deported, or they have also experienced deportation or seen the effects of deportation where their parents or family members have been deported and they were left without them. So we saw protests, but then also some of the effects we saw as well was a rapid response hotline that was put forth by some attorneys here in collaboration with other nonprofits.
Now, Sarah, I understand, since we're on this topic of uncertainty, which has been kind of the general theme of this roundtable, you got to talk with somebody from Jefferson County's health department who actually was at a conference for other health department directors. What did you find?
Right. I was curious to ask Steve Sykes. He's the health director at Jefferson County. I was just curious about if any of these cuts for immunization programs have affected their department. And he said not really, because they've used up a lot of those grants already. Luckily, it hasn't super affected the department. But he said he's at this conference for people like him who are in charge of these local departments. And he says that the vibes are just like very uncertain. Nobody really knows what's going to happen.
There's that unknown of if it's going to get cut. Is it going to get paused and then released? Will it go to a different department? You know, the federal government may eliminate something, but then the money will get moved into a different department. So there's just that uncertainty of knowing what to do for future.
So really what we're talking about here is in March, the federal government eliminated certain grants that were COVID-related grants that were being used for immunization programs. And according to the state health department, which sort of distributes those funds to local health departments and organizations, the federal government cut three funding streams worth more than $250 million, $255 million. And those were earmarked for projects like vaccines and disease prevention. And so at this point, what's going to happen in the future? People don't really know. Like, are more cuts coming? I know Mr. Sykes said that they're looking at eliminating certain positions as people leave the department, maybe just leave those positions unfilled to save some money, just because nobody really knows, like, where they're going to have to be cutting in the future, or if they're going to have to be cutting any kind of budgets.
Andrea, I want to go back to you. You've reported on ways crackdowns on protesting have affected international students, because there's been a lot of high-profile international students who are subject to deportation because of, among other things, what they've said about what is going on in Gaza. What have you heard from folks about how that might affect future protests against President Trump?
A lot of the students are silent. Some students that I've either heard from or that I've spoken to in through their attorneys, it really just kind of silenced them. But I do know that previous reporting showed that some of the students who were, you know, a part of these pro-Palestinian protests, they don't care, and they're going to continue on because they see that it's a great need.
So we've talked about cuts to the federal workforce, the effects of funding cuts, the uncertainty, the word of the day on the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. But I do want to talk about the investment that President Trump and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth they announced that could bring a lot of jobs and investment here. Will, what do we know about the plan for Boeing to build the next generation of F-47 fighter jets in St. Louis?
It was a decision when it was announced in March that was pretty much universally praised from elected officials and local economic development groups. And the reason being, right, is Boeing's defense side of the business is based here in the St. Louis area. They employ about 16,000 people in the region. And the maybe a little step back, some context, is that Boeing had really been struggling. Most of the challenges actually come on the commercial side of the business, but they'd been really struggling, and that was felt here. About 700 people were laid off late last year as part of those company-wide struggles. But the defense side of the company had also been struggling. Lockheed Martin, another military contractor, had beaten Boeing out for a majority of the F-22 and the F-35, which were the last two fighter jets. So the news of Boeing getting the F-47 contract to be built here was one that was really welcome. Sam Page told our colleague Eric Schmidt that this was one of the most exciting developments in St. Louis County in a while. So Boeing's already in the middle of a $1.8 billion expansion out near Lambert. So I think everyone is, yeah, pretty much excited about it.
I do want to play one clip from Senator Eric Schmidt, a Republican from Missouri. We've heard some criticism from both Wesley Bell and others. But it should be noted that Republicans are, as I said, broadly supportive of what the president has done so far.
A lot of big wins early. I mean, I think the border probably stands out the most, right? Basically, it's been decades since we've seen this low a number of border crossings. So, as he said, I think in the State of the Union of the joint session, you didn't need any new laws. As I said a year ago, you just needed a new president. And so he's enforcing the law. I think that's important. I also think we're seeing a lot of investment. I think it's like $1.7 trillion in whether it's Honda or Apple or Mercedes-Benz. So America's back, Jason.
That was Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt talking with me, Jason Rosenbaum, last month in St. Louis County. So we have about a minute left. I want to go around the horn and ask you, what are you going to be focusing on and watching for in the next 100 days? Sarah?
Congressional efforts to cap or slash Medicaid funding, especially since we have a constitutional mandate to provide a Medicaid expansion here.
I'm going to be watching that too. Will?
Is there a significant decrease in the number of federal employees in the St. Louis Metro over the next couple of months?
Andrea?
Well, this new recent or this new executive order that just came down a few days ago on policing, and I want to pay attention to how it's going to affect these communities of color here.
What I'll be paying attention to is how the Department of Health and Human Services deals with autistic people. As somebody who considers himself a part of the neurodivergent community here in St. Louis, there's a lot of alarm over what RFK Jr. is doing. And we're all paying very close attention to next steps. So I want to thank everybody who was on this panel, Andrea Henderson, Sarah Fentum, Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio reporters all. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, thank Jason. You.
Today's episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum
and Emily Woodbury. Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.